Pembantaian itu celana jenisnya jenis tebal, seperti, tebal ya. Ah, seperti ini.
Ya, tapi ada corak-corak kepeta-petaan gitu ya, Pak ya.
Iya, boleh juga.
Kecil ya. Ah, kota kecil gitu ya.
Kota-kota kecil. Ya. Karena aku tetap melihat macam mana cara-cara orang film. Cuman yang tidak aku ikutin pakai cara berpakaian Elvis Presley.
That was the voice of Anwar Kongo from the new documentary, The Act of Killing. And perhaps it's a good thing that most of our audience can't understand what he's saying. The things that Kongo describes shouldn't just be dropped on someone out of nowhere. Now, this isn't to say that some sort of context makes them any easier to digest, but let me try to provide a bit of it anyway. From 1965 to 1966, mass murders were carried out in Indonesia in the name of anti-communism. The victims were those who declared themselves communists or were suspected of being communists or were simply guilty of being Chinese. They were slaughtered at the hands of government-backed paramilitary groups and the local criminals recruited by them. The number of victims has been reported to be somewhere between 500,000 and 2 million, which is the population of a large American city, in case you're wondering. Anwar Kongo was one of those killers. But rather than being in hiding, today in Indonesia, he's regarded as a hero. And that sense of comfort and safety provided filmmaker Joshua Oppenheimer with this astonishing opportunity, a chance to interview Kongo and contemporaries of his from that era about their actions. They embraced this request, even restaging the murders in intimate detail, and this is a truly bizarre touch, also staging these elaborately costumed musical sequences that are somehow inspired by their experiences. In one of these, just to give you an idea, Kongo appears as some sort of benevolent god while a henchman of his is dolled up in drag. This is all hard to fathom and arduous to watch. I'll confess that eventually my brain just wanted to shut down from its inability to process what I was seeing. Now, was your reaction this visceral, Adam, or were you able to bring some sort of clarity to the experience of the act of killing? And if you were, can you tell me exactly what it was I was witnessing? Because it certainly didn't feel like any documentary I've ever seen.
I think the key word there is feel, because it didn't feel like any documentary or any film I've ever seen either. It truly is a singular piece of filmmaking. And yet, it did actually raise comparisons for me throughout the film to a whole host of other movies. I loved getting to the end credits and seeing that both Werner Herzog and Errol Morris are producers on this movie. That made so much sense after watching the film, because when you talk about doing things like using reenactments and staging scenes to hopefully get at some kind of larger truth, a purer truth, if you will, that's taken right out of the Herzog and Morris playbook. I even thought about one of my favorite films so far this year, Stories We Tell. How we make narrative sense of our lives, the stories these killers tell themselves so they can sleep at night or try to sleep at night, all the rationalizations. It's mind-blowing, really, to hear them talk and go through all those machinations. Most significantly or most closely, it made me think about a movie that I don't know anybody else who's actually seen it. It's come up once or twice over the years on the show, Josh, and it's a movie called Enemies of the People. It was one of my favorite films of 2010. And it's a film co-directed by Rob Lemkin with a Cambodian man named Tet Sambath. And it's about this search for retribution and trying to actually get some confessions and get people on the record to admit what they had done during the Khmer Rouge under Pol Pot's regime. Of course, the flip there was they were actually radical communists weeding out all the non-communists, unlike this film. But he's a man, Tet, who lost his father, his mother, and his brother. They were murdered in the Khmer Rouge under that rule. And in 1999, he finally decided, I'm going to go, if no one else is going to do this and no one's admitted to this, I'm going to go and seek these people out. And we see him during the film seek some of these people out and talk to them specifically, get them to admit some of the things they did in these murders. So it isn't a case where they reenact anything, but some of the scenes are just as harrowing. And finally, as I throw out a plug for this film, because it really is so appropriate to our discussion of the act of killing, he encounters a man and becomes friends with the guy who was Pol Pot's number two. He was called Brother Number Two. He was the second in command who carried out all these murders or ordered people to carry him out. He befriends him without telling him, oh, by the way, my father and mother and brother were murdered by you and your people. And it's only much later, and we see it on camera, we see that moment where he reveals that truth to him. So that's a movie I definitely had in mind. It would be a great companion to this film. But I'm certainly not sure that any film, doc or fiction, has ever made me more uncomfortable, more shocked, more horrified and outraged me more than the act of killing. Watching some of the scenes with kids in this movie who are part of these horrible reenactments, and because they're kids, it's very clear that they're either the greatest actors in the world, or, much more likely, they don't really know that this isn't real. They have no sense of what's really going on, and they get caught up in the chaos, and they think people are really getting hurt, and there's really a lot of damage being done. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are being scarred for life because they're part of these reenactments. That's very hard to watch. Just watching the blatant corruption that we see going on screen and the disregard for human life and human decency, not just in the reenactments, but it's going on today. Again, as you said, these people are being celebrated, and they're perfectly comfortable acknowledging what they did, and they're still getting away with it. It's impossible to watch that stuff without having a visceral reaction to it. Fortunately, to get back to your question, there is some clarity, Josh, and that clarity comes from the director, Joshua Oppenheimer, because he deliberately and judiciously and disturbingly, and we can talk about this a little bit, is willing to stand back from the horror of many of these scenes. He doesn't step in. He doesn't try to stop some of it from playing out. He allows it to progress to a level where even the participants, the people guilty of these crimes, are compelled to recognize the nature of what they've done and what they're doing. It only works. His grand strategy here with the act of killing only works if he lets it play out, if he lets this sort of more ethereal but important battle wage on here. There's going to be some collateral damage. But, for example, he can't step in and try to stop someone from being extorted. He can't step in and stop maybe some of these kids from being scarred emotionally, not if he wants the scenes to have the ultimate effect, not on the viewer, but on the people who are participants in it and are the people who are actually reenacting some of the things they've done. He clearly decided it was worth it. And I think the results speak for themselves, especially if, I won't spoil it, you get to the end of this movie. If you get to that point, I think it's impossible not to say his strategy worked.
Okay, but then are you also saying that if we had not gotten to that point, if we had been left in the middle and we don't want to reveal exactly what happens, but that turn hadn't been taken, that the film would have failed?
I think it wouldn't have had as much of an impact as it ultimately did, but I think there are enough moments leading up to that final epiphany that even if we didn't have that final scene, it still would have been very powerful and still would have accomplished its main goal.
Yeah, I would agree. That's why I was asking, because I don't think it all depends on that final moment, though that is the moment that elevates this as a film watching experience. It's interesting. Our producer, Sam Van Halgren, had the same exact word for it that I did independently. We watched it independently. We both came away with the word exorcism. That is what the final moment of this film feels like. I truly have not seen anything like that yet. I don't think we need it to fully appreciate the power of what's going on here, because the moral forcefulness of this picture for me is in its incomprehensibility. It's in the fact that I found myself trying to understand not only how did this happen, because as you've talked about in these other films, historical atrocities like this are something we're aware of and have been documented. So there's that level. But then we're trying to understand how do these men live with this? And especially when early on, it seems like it's no problem for them at all. I mean, every once in a while, they'll refer to having bad dreams here and there. But, you know, we drink, we dance, it's fine. They truly seem to have no awareness. There's a moment very early on where we think it's going to dawn on Anwar Kongo, because he is watching footage of himself restaging how he used to use a wire to kill his victims.
And what does he comment on?
He says, "I wouldn't have worn white pants."
Yeah.
And that's where the fog started to come in to my own brain, because I thought, we're not going to see this guy come to any sort of awareness. And the movie seems to work to allowing that lack of comprehension to linger, to leave us confused. And I think there is a forcefulness there in that we can't explain this guy. We can't make sense of this guy. And the fact that we want to, the fact that we want to say, oh, well, he can put out of his mind this way would make us able to put him in a box. And what we need to do is realize that something like this can't be put in a box. It can't be explained. It's awfulness is what we just have to experience. And so the picture does proceed that way. And these recreations, these musical fantasies, then make as much sense as anything else we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You might think that that would break the film and take you out of it. But after all the things you've seen, the recreations, some of the comments that are made, to see this guy in the next scene be in some lavish musical number, it's just part of all the craziness.
I want to jump off that point here in a moment, but I think we do have to say that what Oppenheimer is doing ultimately is really dangerous, because by allowing us to get into the psyche of this man, by allowing us to spend time with Anwar Kongo and seeing what he goes through psychologically, the fact is, the more you know anybody, no matter what they've done, the more you understand them, the more humanized they are, the more you may even start to sympathize with them. And we're talking about here the humanization of monsters. All these people on screen are absolute capital M monsters. And I think about sometimes when you watch a documentary and you hear sometimes afterwards about how the film was made, that's a complex relationship that a subject has sometimes with a documentarian for that very reason. Sometimes you're making a film about someone you don't like at all or who does bad things, maybe not as bad as this guy does or these people do, but who do bad things. But nevertheless, you have to work with them and you're hoping to pry things out of them. I can't imagine the complexities and just the tenuous nature of the relationship Oppenheimer must have with Anwar, because he, of course, has to have enough objectivity and distance to realize that, yes, this guy is a capital M monster, but at the same time, he spends so much time with him and gets him to have these revelations along the way, or as part of it, he at least lays the groundwork for them, that how can he not empathize with him? How can he not have some feelings for him? And we start to develop those as well.
You know what speaks to that? And maybe this is not entirely how it was translated, but at least the subtitles say Josh. He calls him Josh.
I know.
Anwar Kongo will refer to him every once in a while as Josh.
And yeah, that
they speaks
felt a
to a level
connection.
Of intimacy.
Absolutely.
That's very true. But I think that works exactly with what I'm talking about here, is that to have just kept that distance and that historical approach,
yes,
of this man named this, did this.
Right.
We would feel like we've understood it. We've studied that chapter in history, and that was an awful thing. And this movie does something entirely different by showing us that this was an actual living, currently living it up human being,
right,
who did this.
I think
that's what brings the movie to another level for
no,
me.
No, you're right. It does. It raises it. It raises it to a level of, to use a Herzog term, to the sublime. And that's because I think the movie is actually getting at Herzog's phrase, the ecstatic truth. The truth isn't what you get in facts, some of the things you suggested. It isn't about capturing life without a clear subjective point of view, that old kind of cinema verite approach of we're just going to capture life unadorned and that somehow is more truthful. Of course, it's false ultimately on its face anyway, because there's always going to be a point of view to what you point the camera at, what you choose to shoot and why, and then ultimately what you choose to edit, leave in and leave out. So these filmmakers understand that. And you're right. Oppenheimer could have given us a lot more information about these atrocities, facts about what happened, talking heads, expert opinions about the specific acts committed, about the culture of Indonesia that allowed it to happen and that is still allowing it to be a crime that all these people have gotten away with. But how much more potent and how much more revealing is it? I know we're on exactly the same page here, is to let someone like Anwar portray his vision of himself on screen. You talk about that dream scenario where he's like a god. Okay, so what does that say about him? That he sees himself as almost this benevolent figure with his victims next to him, thanking him for killing them and sending them to heaven. That is so much more not only interesting, but revealing, and I would argue ultimately truthful, than if we had just gotten a film with all those facts. If it's political or propagandistic in any way, I would say it's propagandistic ultimately, Josh, for the power of cinema. It's about the power of the image and the power of, yes, reenacting something, because we then get to experience it as it might have happened in real time. But more importantly, the people who did it get to experience it through this lens of the camera and knowing that they're performing. But even with that distance, they re-experience it. And that distance actually forces them on some kind of intellectual level to try to make sense of it. Or maybe it's just watching it later that they have some of those revelations. There's a character, for example, that we meet, one of Anwar's friends who shows up named Adi, I think, or Adi. And he, at one point, he stops them while they're having a scene or they kind of get to the end of it. And he says, you know what? When people watch this, they're no longer going to believe that the communists were cruel. Our whole myth has been that we were saving the country from the cruel communists. And it's only really in that moment, after being part of this scene, does it really dawn on him that, wow, this is going to change everybody's perception of this when they see how this is carried out. And the bigger scene that really speaks to this, Josh, is the one where this group, this paramilitary group called the Pancasila Youth, they're kind of this thug gangster squad on behalf of the government. one of their leaders comes to participate in one of the reenactments, which is actually the slaughter of a village of women and children. And you kind of see the moment, at least the way Oppenheimer shoots it, you kind of see the moment where he's been spurring his people on to be bloodthirsty and violent and just get pumped up to go kill these women and children and reenact this horrific scene. And it's only when he gets to the end of it, after going through it, he finally realizes not only are people now going to wrongly perceive in his mind how right and just they are, and they're going to think they're too cruel, but he sees himself in that space, I think. And he says, I don't want people seeing me in this type of environment. It's not just a political thing. I think what I'm saying is it's a psychological thing where only in that moment, only having gone through it, can he finally see himself from sort of the outside looking in and go, this is something we're a part of. We're this bloodthirsty. We're this terrible. And I think that's really powerful to watch these people have that epiphany, but they only come to it by being part of these reenactments.
Well, and that's the thing. That village scene, I believe, is the first time Congo utters the word regret, mm-hmm. or even comes close to conceiving of yeah. that as a possibility that his past might have some sort of regret, at least that he reveals to the camera. So it's a crucial reenactment, yet at the same time, it was the most difficult to watch. And you touched on some of the reasons, because there are children involved. And not only do they not stop crying after someone yells cut, I don't know if it could be that they don't know what's real and what's not real. It could just be that the emotion of,
exactly.
I mean, there's fire burning around them. There's actual fire and screaming. They can't let go of that. A grown woman is sitting on the ground who appears to be catatonic.
Right.
After they yell cut. That's the one scene where I wonder if it's a little problematic, and you touched on this in terms of Oppenheimer and the film crew's involvement, mm-hmm. because up to that point, I could say it's a very journalistic approach, even though he's intimately involved in detailing the corruption. We see a scene of bribery going on, and you could say, well, why don't they step in and stop that? Well, they're detailing what is actually happening. It's a journalistic endeavor. And this is a sequence where it's so crucial to what the movie is trying to do, yet the one that I do wonder if that line is possibly crossed.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair question. I think this speaks to exactly what I said about it being disturbing on some level, the approach he chooses to take, and how I think it forces him as a director, as a journalist, if you want to call him that, to stand by and let some of these things happen. By the end of the film, I came to terms with that and I accepted it. But I will tell you where I had issues with how Oppenheimer chose to approach this. And I wonder if this bothered you at all as well, is there seemed to be this sort of ethical question raised by the fact that I was constantly asking myself, what film does Anwar and people like Herman, who's kind of his sidekick, and some of these other people, what film do they think they're a part of? What film do they think they're participants in? Do they realize that the finished product is the movie we're watching, The Act of Killing, a documentary about people who were trying to stage these scenes, but really what we're getting is more of the scenes between the reenactments? Or do they think, and I don't know this from watching the film, I think it's a level of confusion there, maybe purposefully, maybe not, do they think they're part of a film that is like a Hollywood film? They think by the end of it, Oppenheimer is making a film based on their reenactments. It's kind of an action movie.
Yeah, that's how they talk about it.
That's how they talk about it.
So you're right. They don't explain
it. What do they think they're complicit in? And I'm bothered by the fact that because I don't know what they thought they were making, then it makes me feel like he was duping them. And if he's duping them and manipulating them, well, then I love the result he got. But that doesn't mean I'm not bothered by it.
It doesn't bother me. I look at it as being the equivalent of those Daily Show segments or Colbert Report segments.
Well, sometimes those go the wrong way, too.
Yeah, I kind of feel it's a buyer beware situation to a degree. And
I love The Daily Show, let me say. I laugh at those scenes. But
and
sometimes
so in those,
I wonder,
in those cases, you know, I feel like they do your research before you sign on mm-hmm. to this thing. Totally different scenario.
Yeah.
But I would apply it here as well.
Hmm.
I don't feel sorry for these guys for signing on to this.
Yeah.
They
I
know
guess.
When the camera is on them, when they're talking to the camera outside of these recreations, they understand that they're being filmed. It's not like these are private conversations between Oppenheimer and them. I mean, a lot of times they're
yeah.
sitting in a chair and it's a fixed camera. So they know that they're talking directly to the camera. They're not being ambushed. So I was
right.
okay with that technique.
Well, I guess the difference between The Daily Show and this is not just the nature of the subject matter, but you're right. Those people should know what they're getting into. They have the ability to know what they're getting into, and they're the ones who put themselves in those scenarios. So I agree with you, buyer beware or whatever. But with this film, there's no reason for them to have any sense of what Joshua Oppenheimer is doing. They only have his word. They only have what he tells them to go off of. And so there is something to me, look, it's not remotely as bothersome on any kind of scale to what they've actually committed.
No, but just on a documentarian
level,
yeah,
there's
sure.
an ethical question that I think is raised by the fact that I'm not sure he didn't trick them into giving him exactly what he wanted from them. And as I said, I love the result, but it's still a slippery question that I would love to know a little bit more about and maybe get an answer to. But The Act of Killing, obviously, as we've said, a fascinating, fascinating, deeply troubling at times film. It is out now. It's playing at the Music Box here in Chicago. I'm not sure it's a movie that is being held over or not. Very possibly it is. We recommend you go to the Music Box website to get more information about that. We'll link to it as well in the notes for this show at filmspotting.net.
Ini bapak yang PKI ini yang ngajar nih. Tuh nggak dapat ke tangan awak dulu. Kalau dapat ke tangan awak mati nih.